Hey, what's going on? Hey, whoa, wait, yo, whoa, you talking over me? Dude,
jumping in there. What's up? Oh, boy, I'm so sorry. You just got destroyed by all that noise.
Yeah, I don't know what just happened.
The alternative was Ryan powering up like some like some superhero from the superhero, like Goku from Dragon Ball.
How dare you, Vegeta?
How dare you? I don't think he's ever said that. He might have said that.
I don't know. I've never watched Dragon Ball, so.
Get out of here. Well, this isn't the Dragon Ball podcast.
Yeah, once we start an anime podcast, then you can...
If we do, man, that market is saturated. Not that the one we're in right now isn't saturated, but oh boy.
Is there a market that exists that is not saturated at this point in the world?
I mean, that's a good point.
That's another podcast, though. That's not...
That's another podcast. The saturation podcast.
If you're watching on YouTube, you can see...
Oh, hey, whoa. slow down there.
You can see I am sunburnt, man. I went to the Ren Fair today.
Yeah, I was very surprised. You had some nice posts on your personal Instagram. I was like, wait, what?
No, I haven't posted it on Instagram since I graduated college.
So that's a funny thing is I got a notification when I woke up from my nap earlier. I had a busy day and it said, I was about to out your social. Ryan hasn't posted in a while. Check out his new thing that he just did. And it took me to your graduation one.
What?
And I was like, wait a minute, Ryan, I thought you graduated when I did.
See, I was about to say that destroys my whole my plan now is to not post for years and then post something because it's huge for engagement because it sends it out to. I got a notification from our Instagram account that I haven't posted in a while. So I mean, it's great for engagement, you know. Just don't post for 2 years and then suddenly decide to post again, and everyone gets a notification. Literally, everyone on your friends list seems to get a notification.
It's kind of what I do too, but I just stop taking pictures because I don't get ready for school every day.
True.
Now, yeah, I don't look good all the time. Yeah. Well, I do for this podcast. I try to. I got my hat on, actually.
Oh.
This is a reason for that.
Okay. But, yeah, so I went to the Ren Fair, and my girlfriend made us some costumes from scratch, built it up. Yeah, she completely sewed everything. We just went and got fabric, and she sewed and stitched
your hair. I'm sorry. We got to stop.
What's wrong?
Your sunburn is in the form of your hair. Ryan's got like the good old... Yeah.
That's hilarious. Well, you can see where my hair was today. Yeah.
Your audio listeners, he's got kind of one of those. He's got like bangs that are parted to the side.
Yeah.
It's a little swoop. And if you pushed it over, you.
That's ridiculous. You're 100% right, correct.
Please continue your story.
But yeah, we went to the Ren Fair. We were dressed as peasants, some lowly peasants. We participated in the joust. You know, we were shouting.
Oh.
Not personally. I wasn't in the joust, but we were like yelling, you know, as peasants do. Wanting bloodshed, wanting people to die and bleed out for my entertainment. But it was actually, I think it's fairly good for, we're both vaccinated, thankfully, but it's also still fairly good-ish for COVID stuff because it's all outside. You can, for the most part, dictate how close you are to other people. And there were still a good handful of people, but it wasn't like mobs. It's not like you're at Disney World where it's just like everyone's clumped together. There's lots of empty space. You can go into, you know, an open air shop, just you and whoever you're with, find something, then head out. It was nice, man. It was relaxing. It was not too hot, thankfully.
It was kind of hot.
Well, so the problem is I did put on sunscreen. I know it doesn't seem like I did, but I think I put it on too late. It's a common misconception, and I even know this, that even if there's shade, even if it's cloudy out, the sun still exists, right? It's still on the other side.
Man.
Yeah, it's still on the other side of that cloud. And I was like, you know what? I'll put it on later. I even bought sunscreen. I was driving, and we stopped off to get some breakfast. Like, you know what? I'm going to buy some sunscreen while I'm here. And I said, I'll put it on when I get there. I didn't. I put it on like an hour and a half later. And obviously, at that point, it had done its damage.
Yeah, as you can tell by my pasty complexion as well, I am not a creature of the sun, so I feel your pain.
And my girlfriend just tans.
My sister's like that. She must have taken all the, what's it called? Melanin that absorbs the sun and gives you color?
I was going to say melatonin, but that's not correct.
Melatonin. I don't know what that is. I think you've made that same comment before, but for me...
Melatonin is what you take to go to sleep.
Oh, yeah, that's the sleepy stuff. But I watched a movie that was kind of D&D-ish inspired.
Oh, I watched a movie too. It was not D&D inspired whatsoever.
Okay, so we didn't watch the same one. So I watched Onward, that Pixar film.
Oh, great movie.
So yeah, I saw it for, like, I didn't see it forever. I saw the ads for it a long time. Like, oh,
I saw
dude,
when it came
is,
out, man. It's good fun.
Yeah.
It's enjoyable. Like,
it's not as grand as the other Pixar films, like just flat out, but it's
also
a really
well
done.
Also doesn't tell as big of a theme, but it still obviously has a theme. It's a Pixar movie, but
it hits hard. If you're sitting alone and you've got like some family stuff, it's going to get you.
Yeah, you got a brother, a sibling. It's good for that type of stuff. And it's definitely, it feels like, it's one of those movies we've talked about before that feels like a D&D adventure. It feels like you're going on with some friends and, man. I mean, they definitely built it around that.
That's true. To that point, the big thing, like, even me as somebody who's made campaigns and run sessions and played D&D for a long time, however basic their quest seemed, to that point, a basic quest can be boring as hell in Dungeons and Dragons, but they made it super cool. Like, they went to a tavern, basic. It was exciting. It was interesting. All the stuff that happened and the way it was linked together and the emotional things they built in, I was like, how can I, like, implant that into NPC quests? Because it's only like an hour and a half. So how can I make characters that show their importance to some plot to my NPCs and get them connected to? It's like good inspiration.
Yeah. I mean, it's you said it's very simple, but it does it in sometimes an unconventional way, but also just does it it does it so well. It does the simple stuff so well that, I don't know, it just exemplifies why taverns are okay, or why giving someone a MacGuffin to go get, you have to go get this to save the world. It can be okay. Some people like experiencing that type of adventure.
Yeah,
my favorite thing, watch Lord of the Rings and stuff. I mean, come on,
it's true. We talked about that on a previous podcast. That was fun. Yeah. But the big thing I really liked, and this is just an acting thing, I loved the direction they went for the brother, because a lot of the time the younger brother, older brother, the older brother's kind of a dick sometimes, and like is supportive, but there's like a sass about it. Anytime he talked to his brother, every time he did something, it was always like, "You got this. You can do this." And it was just like, that's not often portrayed. Like, there's always like a sibling, the typical like poking fun, and that can jab at you every now and again. But I was just like, it was heartwarming.
I watched what's that? I already forgot the name. It's like the Mitchells versus the Machines or something. It's from the guy that wrote some of Gravity Falls and something like that. It just came out the other day, and it was enjoyable.
Was it a live action film?
No, it was animated. It's lighthearted fun. It was something that I needed after a long ass day of being in the sun. So,
you went to Ren Faire and then that?
Yeah, yeah.
Damn, that was a long fucking day.
Yeah, because we came back and we got some dinner. We're like, hey, what do we want to watch while we eat? And then we saw that. I was like, hey, let's watch it. And we weren't planning on watching the whole thing, but I was like, why not?
Well, you were planning. Wait, did you watch it in your? Oh, you didn't go to the theaters.
No. It's on Netflix. Yeah.
Gotcha. I was a little confused there. Yeah.
So you get a busy day. Put your feet up and watch a flick. Netflix and chill, as they say.
Well, you can podcast and chill today, because we got some fun things to... We're a little late to the party here.
Yeah.
But here on the thing that we do, and I'm wording it this way.
We're usually late to the party because everything releases on a damn Tuesday, and that's when we release our damn episodes.
Yes. We had a fun episode last week. We had an interview with some wonderful authors... Autumn Burt and Jesper Schmidt.
Yeah, if you haven't listened to that, if you skipped it for whatever reason, go back. It's I think even if you're not an author, not even a world builder, you can still get something out of it.
Yeah, it was wonderful. They have a course with the same sort of philosophy behind it. But regardless, I digress. Ryan.
No, that's good, but I'm glad you brought that up. I'm sorry. But the world building thing they talked about, the modules open today, the day of this podcast. You can now go sign up for it. So
if you need any sort of like who are these guys? I want to get a little taste. That's basically a taste of their course.
Yeah, you do have to pay for it. You can either pay it all in one go or pay it over the course of a couple months or something like that. So it's payable. You can make it work if you're really interested in it. But he's Braxton.
Oh my gosh, catastrophe! This is the dungeon crawl. And today, Ryan. What's your favorite class in Dungeons and Dragons? And don't make a joke. I'm actually asking you. He was going to make a joke.
No, I actually don't know.
Give me class. What are you playing right now in our live play, the Dungeon Chronicles?
I'm playing a cleric, a grave domain cleric.
You know what? Your puny scrawny cleric is no good. You need to join my class to get buff and strong. You remember that SpongeBob episode? You need to be a Chad, like Larry, you know? Larry the Lobster. Okay. You need
Barbarian?
To be an Illrigger. No, Barbarian's weak. Join the Illrigger class today and learn how to be a true Chad of Dungeons and Dragons. What the hell is an Illrigger? That's what we're talking about today.
Yes. Yeah, so it's going to be an interesting one because we're not really going to do a whole overview like we do for Arcana or for other stuff. We're going to kind of review it, chat about our thoughts and kind of lead it into a bigger discussion on power in D&D. And I think the overall power creep that Wizards of the Coast has also been doing. Now, this is not a Wizards of the Coast product. I guess we should probably say that. Now, this is a MCDM product or Matt Colville product. He's been playtesting this for, God, I think 5 years now.
Really? Are you sure?
Yeah. I know it may not seem like it, but he is actually, this has been in the works. There are beginner PDFs of this thing. Like, technically, we are in, this is version 2.4, right? The original point one edition of the Illwriter came out, I want to say, in 2016. So this has been in the oven for quite a while. And this is the quote-unquote completed version that we have now. That just got released, last week, a week and a half ago, something like that, 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, it was a week or two ago. And it's pretty cheap. It's $6.66. It's a Hellbase class. So, I mean, that's fun. But, you know, I'm wearing my You Suck hat today because if you're playing something that is not the Illwriter, compared to it, you suck.
Yeah, this came under a lot of fire, man. And
with all the puns.
Nice. I'd say maybe rightfully so. I don't know. I think it also has something to do with how he responded to a lot of the criticisms.
Oh, I know nothing about that.
Basically what he did, for those of you who don't know, the Illwriter is this class he released, and it's like Brax said, it's a devil-based kind of class that kind of combines a fighter with a warlock, with a wizard, with a paladin kind of.
Not together.
No, not
you can be them separately.
Yeah.
With their subclasses.
Each subclass definitely feels unique. I like that.
Oh,
but
yeah.
There's a lot of complaints that it's very overpowered. That, I mean, if you read the title of this episode, it's probably going to say something about this. But this is, it's a fairly strong class. And a lot of people say it's very overpowered. And he said in one of his videos, and I'm not necessarily directly quoting, but he said something along this effect, that if you think the Illwriter is overpowered, try it out in your game first.
That's fine. I agree with that.
But we did.
That's not. We did. We did.
We
yes.
Did. We did.
He shouldn't be under fire for that response.
No, he's under fire because if you try it out, it's still overpowered.
It is. But I think he's with that response. He did not inject an opinion,
opinion
in our brain. He
Fair.
Said, go try it
Fair.
And make your own opinion because he probably thinks you're going to come up with a couple of thoughts. It is overpowered. But
tell me why.
Did you have fun?
True. And that goes into specifically, I think Matt Colville and WotC, Wizards of the Coast, are on opposite sides of the spectrum. He has always, if anyone follows his videos, he does great YouTube videos, been doing them for years now. He's also written a few books and has also worked on a few games, but he's mainly known for his Dungeons and Dragons video work that he does. And he has long been a proponent of fun, the rule of cool, having fun in the game. He brings in old stuff from the past editions that he thought was fun and adds them into 5th edition. So he's very much kind of like not a rules as written kind of guy. He understands the rules are there, but it's still important to have fun. And if your player's not having fun, then change it up and have fun with what you got.
So let's give them a taste of how this compares to current Wizards of the Coast stuff. And I'm going to give WotC the benefit of the doubt and go with something that is from their newer material from Xanathar's Guide.
Yes, because we can bring anything from the Player's Handbook. It's leaks.
Just, like a Player's Handbook, 1 through 20, a class, like a cleric or something, is like one level of this guy.
Besides the same mechanics and numbers and stuff, could be from two different games. You could show me both of those, and I'd be like, okay, this is a newer edition.
Absolutely. That's something I'm going to touch on a bit later. But right off the bat, I'm going to avoid from giving too many damage numbers, types, and levels that you get things at for the most part, because this is paid content. So if you want to get it, please go support Matt Colville and his crazy antics here. To start off, this can be a spellcaster. And even if you pick the spellcaster, your hit dice is 1d10 per Illwriter level.
It is. Yeah.
Chonky boy. Second point of view for me, particularly as a warlock, is that these guys have something called the Infernal Conduit, which gives you a pool of dice. Essentially, it's a sigil that you can put onto people as well. This one in particular allows you to suck health away from people. But the sigils I've mentioned is you can mark people and you can do this damage with these sigils, etc. But when a creature dies with the sigil on it, you can move that sigil to another creature. This is very early on and I'm talking like single digit lower half, to where the warlock, the hexblade, cannot move their hex curse until 14th level. That's their big Mac Daddy thing is for the hexblade, you get your extra 1d4 damage per hitting somebody. You get your, you know, 2x crit chance, essentially, a roll on 19-20. Uh-huh. You get your healing when you kill them, and you can move it. But the Illrigger can already deal damage and heal from these sigils, and move it, and a bunch of other things. And it's just like, what? See?
Yeah, so we played this. We played an Illrigger. Granted, I was we did a one shot just earlier or last week, and I had played an Illrigger. We were level 3, and I was the which one was it? The painkiller.
The first one, right?
I was the painkiller. Mm-hmm. We were level 3, so we didn't have all the crazy fun stuff. But even still,
you were at least like a level 6 or 7 character.
Yeah, even still, I'd say for the most part, I was fairly even with everybody until there was a certain turn where I just...
you're like, I'm going to actually do things now.
Yeah, well, because I was saving myself, because with the one shot, you never know when you're nearing the end of it, and I didn't want to just, you know, kind of blow my load, for lack of a better term, pretty early on. So I let it rip when I was pretty sure this was the final boss.
Come on, man. You're fucking phrasing right now.
Sorry. I just decided to, everything that you only get once per long rest, I decided let's use it all now. And I basically had like 2 turns.
Yes.
And let, I mean, granted, I let everybody else also have like an extra turn, but still, that destroys the action economy at level 3.
Yes. So for each... Let me ask you first, how does that feel? Because there's a big thing for spellcasters and a lot of people, resources, long rest, I need to save. How present was that? After you did that turn, were you done? Do you still, or could you still have done powerful things?
I could not do any more Illrigger stuff. I had already, at that point, I'd already used my, I could only use 2 of my seals, and I'd already used one of them earlier in the session. And so I used my second one in that 2-turn craziness. And I think that I'd already used everything else that I could do with my seals. So I might have had 2 other things I could do, but my axe did more damage than my other stuff, so I wouldn't have done it.
Yes. So for example, those seals that he put, whenever he hits somebody with a seal or his ally hits somebody with a seal, damage is proc.
I do an extra 2d6 damage if I consume said seal.
Yes. And it lasts for a minute, otherwise it goes away. And he also made it to on that one turn, whereas for a warlock, my I need a short rest now is 2 spells and that's it, and maybe my hexblade's curse, whatever. His was everybody as a reaction immediately can attack. So I mean, yeah, you have to, your allies have to be near somebody.
I get an extra attack too.
He gets an extra attack, extra bonus action.
Well, hang on, I get an extra attack from that as my reaction, and because it's my action to do that, and then because I did that as my action, I get a whole nother turn of an action and a bonus action, unless I read it wrong.
No, that was it.
Yeah.
So the biggest thing for these guys to me is what happens when you get your 3rd level subclass.
Yeah.
The innate abilities that you get just right away, like for the painkiller.
Yeah.
It starts off super, super strong.
And I'll even say this right now. I think the painkiller is the least powerful of the 3.
It is. So the thing that we just mentioned now is one of those. As soon as you get into level 3, you're able to gain an extra action as well as a bonus action too. Yeah. So that procs that. And then there's something else that allows you, using your charisma modifier, you did that. It's invoking your authority, basically.
Yeah, I invoked my authority.
You get your typical bonus proficiencies, and then there's the other class, the rogue-like class as well, known as the Shadow Master.
But it's better than a rogue.
It is.
You get 3 proficiencies at level 3.
Much better than a rogue. Their 2 invokes are essentially turn invisible whenever you want for a minute as an action.
Pretty good.
Okay, that's pretty good. It goes really well with some of the things later in the class. And I'm not going to go too in-depth. I just want to, because these are the key things that show up. And as a bonus action, you can place all of your seals on one creature. So imagine everything we mentioned before. That's that many extra procs of damage and a bunch of other things. But the most broken one The most insane one in this entire thing is the spellcaster. And I was not prepared for this. One of the things you get is literally, as a reaction, you succeed on a saving throw against the spell.
Pretty good.
Excuse me.
Pretty good.
Just as a reaction to failing a saving throw against the spell, you can choose
to succeed
instead.
Little did you know, players now have legendary resistances.
Yeah. That's something I was thinking during this whole time. This feels like a big, bad, evil guy.
Yeah, I'd love to use this as a big... I mean, there's even an NPC in this. Yeah.
And the other thing as well, what was this? Oh yeah, this one's even sillier. You call on your devil's authority, I suppose, sure. And you roll a d6 whenever magic missile, a line spell, or a spell that requires a ranged attack roll on you. You roll a d6.
It's most of them.
On a 1 to 5, unaffected. Nothing happens to you. So anytime you're targeted by any of those spells, they do not work. You're like,
five.
Braxton, on that 6, maybe it's you fail. Nope. No.
What happened to them?
On that one, you say, no, you. And that spell goes back to them and hits them. I will say, if it's a line spell and for some reason you're at the end of a line of your party
turn it back
and they're
through.
All in front of you, they're going to get hit twice.
Now... Okay, but let's talk about, before we dive in, because there's also some spells that come in this
too.
I'm
just like, that is so insane.
And the spells are pretty...
Oh my god, yeah,
thick.
Dude.
But, now that specific instance, let's talk about that. You send a spell back, not counterspell, not anything. You literally turn the spell, you like bring it through your form and then like some avatar stuff and then turn it back towards them. How does that make you feel? You feel like a badass.
You feel like a badass.
And that, I think, is what the Yellrigger is all about. Feeling like a badass.
If you're going from the perspective of a player's handbook and you're a DM, you're like, this is going to make everybody else feel bad.
Yes. And that's, to me, that's the problem with this. Braxton brought up a point earlier where, before we started recording, about running a campaign with 3 Yellriggers. And
one
I think,
type.
Yeah, one of each of tenant, I think that would be sick. Because I think the problem
Agents
with this...
Agents of Hell.
Yeah.
Let's go.
The problem with this is when you have somebody playing an Yellrigger and then somebody playing a Player's Handbook Beastmaster Ranger. They are...
Good example.
...not even in the same ballpark. And you'll feel... I mean, one of you guys in the party will feel fantastic. You're doing crazy stuff every turn. Then you got poor Timmy over here who's doing... nothing. He's so excited to have his bear in combat with him, but he realizes it's not exactly the way he wanted it. And then we got Sheila over here who's just going to town with her Yellrigger.
Going to town, dude. And Sheila's Yellrigger, you want to know what she can do at basically, what is it, level 3 as a painkiller? You want to know? So Sheila can have a 30 AC. It's not even, where is it? It might even just be the base class. Hold on.
Are you talking about
it's a second level.
You're talking about the fighting style.
Yes, you can have a 30 AC at second level. I'm not going to tell you how or why, but you can have a 30 AC just by picking one of 4 fighting styles at level 2 on top of whatever you have. Like, you can have a shield too. It's just like, but it's like, I would love to play a campaign or a new tabletop RPG where everybody's like this.
Yeah, so... I think this, and I'm curious if Matt Koval has run into this with his stuff that he's done on people feeling not as cool in the party or not as important in the party, because I think if he were to continue with his philosophy, make more of these classes, it would feel a lot better, because then everybody could kind of pick one, but then it kind of, then Watsy's going to be over here like the ex-girlfriend who's just got dropped for the all-new fancy, fun, pretty classes from Matt Colville.
That's what I'm excited about. At the beginning of, I think, purchasing this, they mentioned that they're going to be making more classes.
Yeah.
And my literal thought is just, I may only play campaigns with their classes.
Yeah, if there's a bunch of these type of stuff, man, everybody's going to... I mean, I think the biggest learning curve will be DMs learning to have to make combat that still makes this challenging, still makes combat tough with all the crazy stuff these guys are doing.
I don't want to harp on Hearthstone again. I've done this before, I don't know if it's on podcast or not. But the comparison between Magic the Gathering and Hearthstone is very apt here. Not the randomness and whatnot, but Hearthstone feels like baby Magic the Gathering. The damage is way lower. The health pools are way lower. Everything that goes on is way smaller. And then you go Magic the Gathering, but there's like infinite combos and things that you can shit up. The difference in scalability and like ceiling for epicness, it's the same here.
Yeah.
It's very similar to me. I don't know if that's how you feel about it, but it gets me excited because D&D 5e, there's... In the beginning, when you've got a lot of players that are new and a DM is new, it feels overwhelming.
He said in the beginning. This is like a...
In the beginning, there was but one fighter. No, it's a short explanation. You get overwhelmed because there's a lot to keep track of. Justin, in our one shot that we ran from our Discord, was looking over things, dice rolls. It took a bit.
Yeah, my girlfriend, first time for her playing, she's doing a cleric spellcaster. Awesome. I mean, there's a lot of stuff you got to juggle with that. She was kind of leaning over asking questions, but I mean, imagine playing this for your first class.
Yes, that's why 5e is the way it is. They did not want people to have to be like, with this Proxman, and I need to turn and play Pot of Greed and get two cards, and what's going on?
Like for the turn that in question, the third level turn that we did in the combat, I was like, okay, I was crossing things off of my paper. I was like, okay, now I got to do this. Oh, I forgot to add these three extra damage that I get from this other ability. Okay. And then I got to add in this. And there's a lot to juggle. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's fun, but I also get the idea, you know, looking around the room, everyone's like, okay, well, I want to do stuff like that.
It worked well. Me and you were basically doing everything. And that's just because you were playing that class and I like to try to min max. So that's what happened. Mm-hmm. But the point of the story that bounces off what Ryan just said is everybody in fifth edition, if you play for long enough and you stay in the community for long enough, gets adept at dealing with the rules and can handle more advanced classes, which makes sense why WotC is doing power creep right now, because there's a healthy player base that is continuing to grow and being dissatisfied with the simplicity that fifth edition offers.
Good.
So as well as the developers are growing while making fifth edition and their minds are just naturally going towards power creep, so too are the players. And Ryan wanted to talk about this, the power creep that we're seeing currently in content.
All of us in the one shot, except for one, played an Unearthed Arcana race.
Yep. I played an Unearthed Arcana race and class.
Granted, I wanted to just see how it felt because I'm curious, you know, because we've talked about
them.
We
knew we were doing the episode.
I want to see how it works, but I'm also like, this just seems more powerful than the other classes. Granted, my girlfriend played a Rabbit Folk, and I actually think that felt weaker than some of the other ones. So I guess that's something, but...
That hop ability just needs to be figured out, man.
Well, as far as I'm aware, I think it's just the hop and the proficiency bonus to initiative, and I think that's all they really get. I'm forgetting something, but nothing impactful.
Yeah. Well, for the Owl Folk, just being able to innately fly is an amazing thing, and there's no direct balance there. Like, because they have flying, they don't have a lower walk. Nope, there's no compensation. It's just something great, and I abused it in combat.
It's a great effect.
It's great. I loved it. It was wonderful. And I had a javelin of whatever, smiting or lightning or what have you. And I rose up and I yeeted it down onto one of our enemies and they died, impaling them in a strike of lightning. It's great.
Stuff like that, I feel like, is in an okay place, right? Because there's already Eric Hokura and whatnot. But then we get into some of the more recent Unearthed Arcanas where they're literally redoing races that already exist in another book, but they're making it stronger and better. I think that honestly is the definition of a power creep. You're making something that already exists stronger in a different format. Mm-hmm. I don't know where they go from. I mean, you look at the player's handbook versus Xandathar's, then versus Tasha's, and it's like each one is a little bit stronger than the one that came previously in most cases. So I don't know where they go from here. They just keep slowly making things stronger, making the older things obsolete. Does that mean that I feel Brad bringing up Timmy every time, but poor Timmy, if he just gets into D&D and starts buying the books, I mean, he's going to have to use like $120 to get all the books and figure out exactly what he wants to play. Mm-hmm. And he's got to work his way through. I mean, should they start saying buy the newest stuff? Don't buy the old stuff, but you got to buy the old stuff to understand the new stuff because it has the stuff that you need to understand. I mean, it's just like...
There's a few points to come from here for both sides. On one end, it's you literally don't have to. You just find some people who are all beginners and just pretend that stuff doesn't exist and just play Player's Handbook, you know, basic D&D. There's that option. So that's the four side of all this. It doesn't matter. You have choice. It's okay. At the same point, you've got people who are veterans, and it's kind of like a, not necessarily like a, it is kind of a sunk cost fallacy. Sunk cost fallacy.
Yeah, that's what it's called, yeah.
Where you're continuing to have to buy new things because you feel like your old stuff isn't fun and engaging enough for you. So it's kind of a predatory sense, like, hey, look at all this new shiny stuff. Ooh, it's like a gacha game. The new 5 stars that are coming out are way better than the other ones. You better start buying the new 5 stars. And all of the stuff that you bought before goes in the wind. It feels kind of like wasted money. So at this point, it's just like, make a new 5th edition or player's handbook with these races. Put them in there.
But now, with that same idea, let's say you're someone like Kenneth, one of our friends, who has bought literally every single like limited edition book that comes out.
And then a new edition comes out.
A new edition drops. Do you feel like all that's now wasted?
Or Thankfully, he doesn't, but I think people would feel that
way. And I think that's now they're also their concern, is that they don't want to feel like, with Magic, whenever the whenever there's a rotation, granted there's formats you can still play in, but half your play set, maybe your favorite deck, is now gone, and you feel like you have to now buy a whole new set to keep playing, which you kind of have to. It's kind of the whole point, but I mean, it's a similar idea, and maybe they don't want to do that.
I don't know, dude. It's rearing its head a lot, especially with the Illrigger here, just kind of thinking of, they might get to this one day. If they keep building on 5th edition, like, they're not going to stop, but there's no consistent design philosophy. And I think that's due to directly the fact that they are using contractors. And whenever you say, hey, contractor, we want you to make a class for 5th edition, they're a part of the player base more often than not. And that power creep exists because they look at the old classes, or they just have them in their mind and they think, well, I want to make something that's cool and fun. And cool and fun generally, that builds from the feeling of, I want it to be better than what I know, rather than going the harder route of making something unique within the same bracket of what I've done. If you're a freelancer and you're trying to meet a deadline and you want to make a cool class, give it a stronger ability, more powers that are just better. WotC is going to be like, all right, we can sell this and make more money. Sure. And that's just continuing to stack and stack, unlike when they usually would have like an in-house team that creates a tight kind of sphere around the power that they want. This isn't some like shonen manga where like the main protagonist gets a new Rasengan beam or some shit. Yes, I'm mashing things together, but you know what
sure,
I mean.
Sure. I mean, I don't know for a fact if WotC has that for like Tasha's. I don't know if they're third party people, if they're freelancers. We do know that they are for adventure modules and whatnot. But I don't know. Like, I know Tasha's has Crawford as the Jeremy Crawford as the lead designer, but some of these other names, I don't know. They could be freelancers. And that would definitely bring in some problems. And even if you're not a freelancer, how do you make a class stronger than another class or another subclass, or make it more interesting? Or, I mean, you just got to add stronger abilities, and you're just going to keep increasing and keep increasing.
I don't even think Ryan mentioned this. I know he said it before the podcast, so I may be having deja vu here, but the Illrigger gets a feature at every single level.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So there's only 4 other D&D classes that get stuff literally every single level. Most of them don't.
This class cannot get feats. It does not say it can get feats in there. You can obviously homebrew it, but there is no subtext, parenthetic, italicized text that says you get your ability score improvement or you take a feat. And I think that's probably because this isn't sponsored D&D content, so he can't say take a feat from the Buffalo Wizard of the Coast, which is probably why, but it's still good to know that. And the spellcaster class in this is not a half caster. It is a full blown balls to the wall, shitting out spells. It picks its spells, readies their spells. It's not like a warlock where you're stuck with those for the most part.
No.
It's like a cleric where they choose, granted there's a mechanic behind it, but they get to pick their spells. Also, there's a 25% chance at some point that they can just get that spell slot back when they cast it. And they have essentially at some point an immunity to every single spell save. It's like no one can get this unless they have like 42 magic items attuned to them somehow, and they've homebrewed a ton of shit. It's like, I want to talk to Matt Colville and think, where does this class fit in with the other classes that are available in the Player's Handbook?
Yeah.
It just doesn't. But I do love it. Do not get me wrong here.
It's got some really cool ideas.
It does. And as a player who was with Ryan...
I want some more subclasses that cover other devils and other lords of the Nine Hells that aren't in here.
It's touching upon a spot that Ryan has mentioned before. He wants more, like, plain stuff. And there's some really interesting lore they've written before each class, and even within the class, when you're third level and you've got to, you know, be assigned to a devil, it's like, dude, they don't give a shit about you. They just sign your contract, and as long as you're spreading the bad will of their name, you're cool. But as you get more powerful, they notice you and stuff, and it's just really fun and interactive. It's like a warlock. This is a cool warlock. This is a hellish warlock.
It is.
Through and through.
Stronger and cooler and more interesting.
I would love to get Jeremy Crawford, Matt Colville in the same room and talk about the classes they're working on now and the classes just together and run their mouths and see why Jeremy Crawford wouldn't do this or how much Jeremy Crawford thinks this is great and wants to do it. And then vice versa for Matt Colville. I want to know more about what they're designing, why and how, and where they're going.
Yeah. I mean, we kind of get a little bit of that through Jeremy Crawford's Twitter and a little bit through how we see a Unearthed Arcana go through the iterations, like see if it's dumbed down or see if it's added stuff on. I feel like a lot of times when we get Unearthed Arcana, it's almost already kind of in its final form. We don't see many changes nowadays.
There's syntax and stuff. Also, there's a spelling error in this.
There is. Yeah, I didn't notice
that. You saw it too? The term, tum?
Yeah.
I was like, is that just the kerning or the kerming? It was, it made me laugh.
But I think, I mean, as we've noticed with, say, the Drake Wardman, which Braxton ended up playing.
Ooh, it was a blast.
It's fixing some of the problems that the older classes have. And I can see them wanting to make stuff that's powerful and more interesting. It has more moving parts to it. But we run into that problem with alienating
old
people.
I think
the
Drake Warden is perfect.
I agree. I like it.
It is exactly where I think they could stay and exist. Because just at third level, you get a Drake that can attack as well as buff people. And that alone, it doesn't add too much. It is a summon, but they say flat out it starts after you, and pretend like it's an extra weapon attack for your player. It doesn't need to be this summon scare me action economy type of thing. It does help. It gives your player more to think about on the middle of their turns. They're gonna be more engaged in combat, hopefully.
Yeah,
they're
like
paying attention
to it. To attacks.
It makes them think about their fellow players because of the Drake Warden. If they're within 30 feet of another player that makes a melee attack, it can infuse that with damage, and that ability scales, so it's not stale.
Reminds me, the Illrigger gets a thing like level 15, I think. I don't know that
the
everything around
everyone
it has like a D4, every enemy or something. And I think
players included.
The cool thing about that is, I mean, it's like a really cool big effect, but I mean,
it's something D6 necrotic. And you heal that damage.
That's a lot of extra. No, you're thinking something else.
Oh, am I? Is that a spell?
Yeah. I'm thinking of the Order of Despair. And anything around, whenever a hostile creature within 15 feet of you makes an attack roll or is other stuff, they have to roll a d4 and subtract it. So it's like a bane on somebody. But it's every hostile creature around you. The problem with that, like, I don't like this design philosophy. Adding more dice and cumbersome stuff to combat, I think this will be annoying for a DM to deal with. There's a lot of stuff around. Like, imagine a creature rolling in and like, all right, I'm going to take, this thing's going to take two attacks, this thing's going to take three attacks, and every time the Illrigger is in the back saying,
roll a d4 to that.
Okay, roll another
d4.
You
forgot, two turns ago, I forgot the... That kind of thing. So, to another point of WotC's stuff, is they also make Magic the Gathering, where this insane power creep does exist, but old cards are still being used. But think about the Illrigger, like a blue player. They have a reaction that happens for everything. Every time something happens, something is procced, you hurt people, it messes up your fellow players, it leaves a bad taste. But
it's like a well-ironed Magic deck, Everything's working as it should be.
It is, but think about like a player who's playing like red, white, blue with a splash of blue, and there's enough control and things that happen that aren't just like flat out damage that makes use of everything on the board. And this, I would say, is like an extreme where it does everything. It controls, it damages, it heals, it casts spells. But if you go to the Drake Warden, it's pretty simple at third level. You get an extra buff. You get another body for extra action economy. Uh-huh. It's a ranger, so they can dabble in a little bit of extra stuff, but they're not an expert in everything. Versus like the Tidecaller Warlock or whatever it was, the one that has the tentacles, can do some cool damage. Or the genie that does like no damage, basically, and is just purely support. It leaves a bad taste in my mouth when a class for Warlock, and a lot of the Warlock classes, just suck at dealing damage. Or doing anything outside of like buffing in a really like niche way.
So you think classes should focus on doing one specific, like say an Overwatch philosophy where they kind of most heroes are good at specific roles, you know? Characters that can do a little bit of everything.
I'm fine with a little bit of everything. I want them to reevaluate what is fun in a session to do. Find like key identifiers, dealing a shitload of damage, healing a shit ton. It doesn't have to be shit ton. Healing, control, or doing like weird, awkward niche buffs like the genie is not fun to me. It absolutely could be fun to somebody. I have a friend who said they love the genie class.
Yeah, I was just thinking that for that philosophy that some classes will feel good in certain campaigns while others won't. And I think that brings us kind of to the ending topic for the Illrigger is, should you buy it? Is this good for your game? That's a tough answer. I think it has a place in D&D. I think it has a place in some games, but I think it can cause more problems than it would for people to have fun. I think the guy picking this class would have a blast, but I think his fellow friends around would be like, okay, can I die and play this? But then I feel like the DM also might be like, you're out shining everything. My combat is terrible now. My encounters are just getting demolished. What do I do? And then you talk to the DM or you talk to the player to try to figure out how do we make this a little easier. And then you're just kind of homebrewing and changing the entire thing here. Is it worth bringing into your game? It's tough. I think it can. Like, we've had some players and some friends talk about how, my game is just balls to the wall. We do whatever the hell and just have fun with it. Sure, toss it in Illrigger, go crazy. But then I've also had people talk about how we want a more grounded game. We want everyone to kind of feel like they're doing stuff. Then, or low, even a, like a low magic campaign. I don't think this would work at all.
Oh God, no.
I think one
of the classes would work.
I think no, because the way it would balance out with other classes would be giving those other characters more magic items. And if you're doing a low magic campaign, those characters don't have those magic items. And then this guy shines out even further.
Yeah.
I think you should buy it though. It's $6.66. Why not?
I think you should buy it because I think it's going to develop the D&D community's mentality around classes and what you can do.
It's definitely my favorite third party class, I think, that I've seen.
It's the favorite class that I've seen ever. I haven't read nearly as many as Ryan has.
Well, most third-party classes stick to the D&D philosophy, and this definitely breaks that entirely.
This absolutely breaks it. Because the D&D community, there's a strict grouping of people that will say this is way out of balance. They've got a pretty decent sense for player's handbook level balancing, and they will shut you down.
That's a second reason why I didn't want this to be a full-on like review and talking about every little thing, because there are people that have done way more work than Brax and I could ever do. I'll shout them out really quick. They're on the Matt Colville Reddit. They're called Level 2 Janitor. They had a very extensive review and their philosophy or their understanding of Matt Colville's philosophy. And then Vicarious Drow did another long review and thought dump on this. And it's fascinating to read. You can really see the problems as well as the cool factor of a lot of this stuff.
Yeah. I absolutely recommend to get it. It's a cool couple cups of coffee. You just skip those every once in a while. And I mean, the scary thing is if you're a player, this could absolutely taint your mindset towards player's handbook stuff, and you could just find that to be boring. Uh-huh. So if you're that type of person that sees something like me and your standard gets raised immediately to whatever the most powerful thing you've seen is, maybe don't get it. If you're okay with tempering your expectations and you're fine with playing with the standard stuff and it doesn't bother you knowing there's something more powerful out of there, absolutely. As a DM, get it. Because for me,
yeah,
you guys are going to find out in the Dungeon Chronicles, our live play that we do, which we're going to be recording this Monday that passed previously, so you have just missed it.
I just want someone to everyone, take a shot every time Braxton does this. It happens every episode.
Calm down.
If you guys missed it, it's okay. Yeah. It'll be back on Thursday. You can watch it on our YouTube channel.
The next live stream you'll be able to catch is May 17th.
Yeah, which is on twitch.tv/DungeonCrawlNetwork.
Yeah, I was going to let him get that one. Nice. But you're going to learn is I make combat that seems impossible for the players at my level. And they're going to start seeing that soon if they start venturing and fighting things. It depends on what they want to do. But what I do is I use the environment to empower them, and I try to drop hints and create environmental tools and encounters that allow them to succeed in those situations. Being able to topple those enemies that are immaculately more powerful than them with the tools of the world that builds, you know, the setting itself, but as well as makes them feel like they're capable too, even in the face of like a Godzilla, I'm just saying like if that happens. I've got a fun encounter that could happen next session.
Okay.
Be interesting. Right. But the reason is this class would work in my campaign. They would not be overpowered. It would still be not as fun for the other players though. So if you're like me and you make really hard combat encounters, yes, check it out. In sentence, period, done. That's my.
I guess my final thoughts on Matt Colville, period, is I want to see him make a monster manual. I think his monsters would be bonkers. I mean, he's the one that I got the philosophy on doing action-oriented monsters, and it has absolutely changed the way I do combat. And I think it's made it so much more interesting.
Do you think it would? His monsters would just feel like Counterspell the Monster, though?
No.
I worry, because this class, from the point of view of an enemy...
I don't think he would, because anyone who thinks that, and I don't know if Braxton's watched his action-oriented monsters episode, he has, like, breaks down a goblin, what a goblin can do, what they've done in previous editions, and adds on actions, adds in things they can do, and it feels... I mean, I feel like this is what a goblin chieftain would be able to do to you. So it's really cool. I mean, like on kegs, like some of the abilities he gives the on keg is that it could just burrow down and like reappear somewhere else. That's what an on keg would do. I mean, it's very cool. And I recommend action oriented monsters to every new DM that I talk to. It's a very tough thing to learn and balance. And I think that's okay if you're all right with tweaking and changing things on the fly, because you might actually make a action-oriented monster homebrew that is just absolutely out of this world.
And as long as we're getting recommendations too, I will say the art.
Oh my
in
god!
This,
yeah,
like if Orion's right, you could see his face. Right, the art in this is of the same tier of the most beautiful Magic the Gathering arts that you've seen.
Yeah, his other book, Strongholds and Followers, fantastic as well. And they're making another one called Warfare and something, I don't know, but definitely check out MCDM. They're putting out really cool content.
Give a check the art direction and the artist that did this, Jason Hasenauer. I think he's probably some sort of German or Germanic name, and he was the art director, and then the general artist is Grace Chung. They did stellar work, so yeah. Give them a check out as well, even if you don't want to buy this. I want to say their name so you can look and see, because the art, and like, if you're looking for diversity too, one of them is just a straightforward white knight dude, but or dark knight dude, true. But true. Like they make diverse looking characters as well, and it's really engaging and it's not bland at all. I love it.
So new spells too.
There's new spells.
There are, but there
and an NPC and what are those
retainers?
Retainers, yeah. So you don't just get the class. So more value for this.
Yeah. So Brax. Ryan. Coming to a close on the Yale Rigger, this is something we haven't done in a little bit, and I actually don't know if I've talked to you about this. he's giving me a look. So you're going to know what to do in a minute. I just want you to intro it, and I'll take over. Okay,
I
ready?
Swear to God.
Guys,
we got some news this week.
Yeah,
give me
a
second to realize, dude, what the hell? I don't even know. What do we got?
So in this week's News Corner, I want to preface this by saying, if you're looking forward to Van Richten's Guide to Ravenloft,
I made a post and it freaked me out.
Okay.
Did you see one I saw?
No, I haven't seen that part.
All right, cool. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, yeah, it's kind of scary. But
yeah.
If you're looking forward to it and want to go in 100% blind, then go ahead and check out now. Thanks for stopping by. I appreciate you listening to the podcast because the table of contents for the book.
Holy shit. Give me that now.
Is out. So I'm going to link it to you, Rex. We're not going to go through the whole thing. And this is from someone, I believe, who let me make sure I'm correct here. No. Someone received their book early. They received their book early, and someone asked, I'd love to know what domains of dread are in the book, and they responded with the full table of contents.
Find it yourself, they said, I suppose.
Pretty much. I mean, they didn't give any more information, so let me send it to you, Brax.
So the post that I saw was something regarding body horror.
Okay. That's kind of
in Ravenloft. It's a thing, apparently. It's going to be a part of it. And they had a really juicy description. He just took a fucking picture. Are they going to be fired?
I don't know. I don't know. But hey, that's not my fault. So the exciting thing about this to me is that each domain has about, looks like 7-6 pages. That's pretty big. I mean, for a full D&D page, that's pretty chunky. Granted, it could just be a gigantic art page, right? But
Reborn Hexblood Dampier.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, it's got the lineages are in there. There's some dark gifts, some backgrounds, a whole section of creating.
I saw Warlock the Undead and I went, huh? All right.
Creating your own domain of dread. It covers all the domains of dread. Unfortunately, there's some that are delegated to just a page, but the majority of them get a lot of stuff. It talks about how to run horror, which is honestly what I'm looking forward to the most, is how to run horror. I'm hoping there's going to be more horror mechanics. Cause
body horror, cosmic horror, dark fantasy, folk horror, ghost story, gothic horror, other horror genres.
The problem with horror in D&D, and you can go back to our podcast episode on this, is that once you hit a certain level, it's hard to do unless you pull on the actual player's fears, which is honestly what you probably should be doing in the first place. And then it covers all the monsters that are going to be in here. And it's actually pretty big. There's 30 pages of monsters, so that's pretty exciting.
Well, and that's it. I heard of Gehenna. You've mentioned Gehenna many of times.
Yeah.
What is that?
Where you see that? Is that in the domains?
Page 169. Nice.
169. Nice. Yeah. That's one of the one of the domains. Yeah. I feel like we talked about it.
We did a lot.
And they delegated it to a page, didn't they?
I think so. I don't know. I just remember. It's just sticking out in my brain. Sorry if it's off topic.
No, I don't remember. I'd have to pull up my notes, but it would mess up.
I got the Vistani here again. See what they do with those.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to this. It's gonna be sick. It comes out in what, like 2 weeks? It's on your mom's birthday. That's all I know.
For preparing for horror, running horror games after that.
Yeah, it comes out on the 18th. So it comes out in 2 weeks.
A spirit board.
Yeah, this is Braxton's first time, so this is his unbiased reactions.
New monsters, vampiric mind flayer.
Did I tell you about the new monster? I'm gonna spoil a new monster. All right, I'm gonna tell you about it. Then we'll end the episode, okay?
Strigoi.
I'm telling you about it. I'm pretty sure it's in here.
Nosferatu.
I'm gonna keep it a stack with you, Braxton. I actually don't see it in here, but they've talked about it on other episodes or other areas. So I'm gonna mention it. I don't know what it's called, but there's a bag of holding in here somewhere.
Oh yeah. We talked about this.
There's a bag of holding in here that you can give your players. That is actually not a bag of holding. It's a creature. It's a entity that can crawl out of said bag of holding in the middle of the night and strangle your players to death. If your players didn't already have trust issues with the DM, this will elevate those to a degree beyond belief.
That if your players don't have and they see or is offered somewhere, it's a bag of holding that they're going to want to take. So it's like that hand that chokes you that Ryan threw at us one point.
Yeah.
Starspawn Emissary.
Some more star spawn in here. That's
greater
cool.
Star spawn emissary. Aren't Strigoi like gargoyle things?
Strigoi, I believe so.
Yeah, I got some knowledge here. Swarm of maggots. Woo!
Vampiric mind flare.
Carrionette. Interesting. That's exciting. This book's gonna be a chonker.
Are you ready for this?
What?
For this book? Are you ready for this book?
I'm fucking stoked.
Now, okay, I'm going to say it here. Podcast is going to be over after this. But last thought, If WotC screws up this book, I'm going to be so upset.
Ryan's going to be at your doorstep, WotC.
And I'm checking out. I will not be looking forward to any more WotC stuff. I think Kenneth and I actually thought about this too, that this is kind of their last straw.
Is it the last straw because it's a personally, you're biased towards this topic, or is it truly the last straw?
It's because it's a couple things, you know, have been leading up to this moment.
Mm-hmm. I just hate the Warlock Undead subclass, but, you know, it's fine. It's fine. The Haunted One's getting officially or put in this, at least.
The back, it was in Curse of Strahd. I'm curious if there's going to be any changes.
I
literally have used the Haunted One in every cleric.
It gives you some good shit.
In every character I've ever made. Just
I have
I
been
know
paying attention
me,
to so. It, by the way, in our game.
Oh, cool, man.
Don't worry, because I know a lot of people forget about backgrounds.
Yeah. There. Have an episode of backgrounds.
God, if Matt Colville made a background, dude, shoo, that's cool. Actually, gives you everything.
Yeah.
The chosen one. All right. As always, if you want to talk to us about, I think this is a really fun episode. If you want to chat with us about this episode on social media, at Dungeon Crawl Pond for Instagram and Twitter. We post a little more frequently now. Every week I'll post a little clip from both the Dungeon Chronicles, our actual play podcast, and this one whenever Ryan and I make a funny statement or something. So look forward to that.
Every single thing we say.
I just repost the whole episode. Just kidding. No, I cut it and edit it a little bit. And that as well, if you want to talk to us over email, thedungeoncrawlpod@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. It's still learning how to correctly categorize our spam, so if you get tossed somewhere where I don't see it, I apologize.
Instagram as well.
Instagram as well.
Has been tossing stuff into the weird areas.
Takes a little bit for it to... It's a little aggressive with the spam, which I suppose I appreciate, but it's not fun for a growing podcast. Speaking of which, I have been very happy lately because our Discord has been giving me a lot of time to hang out with people, play video games. We're playing a lot of Overwatch lately. So if you're interested in hanging out with us, we've got a lot of channels, a lot of people who are interested in anime, comic books. There's a guy who basically runs the fucking memes channel. I talk about VTubers all the time. I need more VTuber friends. Get in there. It's in the link tree below, as well as the links to everything else that you want. Our live play is on Twitter. Ryan already mentioned it, the Dungeon Crawl Network. We stream it every other Monday, so that will be the 3rd, which has already happened, and the 17th, and then every other Monday from then on.
Those episodes get posted to our YouTube channel, which you can also find in the link tree.
The Dungeon Crawl is the YouTube channel.
Yep.
May change at some point, but we'll probably stick it with that for now. But if you search the Dungeon Crawl Podcast, that's how you'll find it. Yeah. You're not famous yet. Ryan, on to you.
Mm-hmm. Something crazy happened earlier this week, before the Rin Fair and stuff. I finished up college, right? And I'm going to tell you, this semester of college, of grad school. Thank you. Still a feat to be celebrated.
Oh, yeah.
I have about a month off until the next semester starts. But something happened, right? In the last week, I was exhausted. And I'm going to tell you, I went to bed, woke up. You know what sleep paralysis is, Braxton?
Yes.
Yeah. So I woke up with some little sleep paralysis. You know that picture with like the guy like sitting on someone's chest? It was like that, except there was this long... No, no, no. It was this long-horned creature sitting on top of me. You know what it told me, Braxton?
What?
Oh, he's terrified right now. He has gone into the fetal position. he leaned over into my ear and said, "Sign this." And he unfurled this paper in front of me, and it was this contract. And I read the contract, and it mentioned that if I signed this, I'd have to go to the Dungeon Crawl on Apple Podcasts, rate it 5 stars, and if this happens, and I write a nice review, of course, then the devil will then grant me a higher spot.
It'll be
on
third level Illrigger.
No, he'll grant me a higher spot in the Apple Podcast recommendations and the leaderboards and whatever stuff. But this only happens if our viewers go out and do it as well. So if you want to help out Asmodeus, then please help me out as well, because my soul has now been sent to the 9th layer of the hells. I would very much appreciate it.
I'm upset.
What's wrong?
Because,
man,
when you do that, there have been a couple of times where like I genuinely like, oh, and I'm like listening to you like, yeah, and I intro you into this part of the podcast where every time you do the Apple Podcast thing,
And yet my naivety, which is pretty standard in my ability.
Listening. He's caring about what I'm saying.
I'm like, oh, wow. I didn't know you had sleep. Like, I literally was like, oh, this is interesting. And then I realized, I was like, oh, this is another Apple Podcast thing, isn't it? And it's happened several times. This is like the third time I've genuinely been like, oh, that's a cool story. So if you want to see more of Ryan's awesome acting, who can fool a pretty naive person like myself, it's on the Dungeon Chronicles. Check that out as well on any podcast site. Same places. He is Romano.
Well,
Oregano. As always, he's been Ryan.
He's been Braxton.
You didn't hear Mike that time. This has been the Dungeon Crawl. Thank you for crawling with us. Next time, I don't know what we're going to do.
I had an idea, but I don't remember anymore. So we'll discuss it and we'll come back to you next week.
Could get back into our class stuff.
Yeah, we could. Yeah, it's been a little bit. Maybe this will be a good introduction to classes.
Maybe we'll reformat it a little bit, but I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how it goes. Thanks for joining in. This was a fun episode. I'll see you guys in the sleep demon in your dreams
next week
and in the next episode.
Creepy.